More women are coming to Illinois from surrounding states for abortions. That's because some of the toughest regulations in the country are here in the Midwest. Thomas Fisher is Indiana's Solicitor General.
We have a law that prohibits abortion in the context of, you know, a disability diagnosis.
A federal court stopped that law from taking effect this month, but women in that state, Missouri, Wisconsin, and others are coming here to Illinois in part to avoid other restrictions. Also, today, the flagship campus of the University of Illinois gets a new chancellor, Robert Jones. He would be the first African-American to lead the Urbana campus. This morning, University President Timothy Killeen called it a historic day.
This is an exciting and important moment in the history of the University of Illinois.
We speak with the incoming chancellor. A court ruled this morning against an effort to overhaul the way Illinois' voting districts are created. We find out what happens next. That's all coming up on the 21st. Stay tuned. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Illinois has seen a surge in recent years in women coming here for an abortion. That's because many surrounding states have waiting periods, mandatory counseling or ultrasounds, other requirements that Illinois doesn't. An article this month in Crane's Chicago Business reported that Planned Parenthood of Illinois saw a 20% jump in all kinds of its medical visits in Illinois in the last year. In a few minutes, we're going to be speaking to the reporter who wrote that story. We're also going to be joined later in the hour by Planned Parenthood in Chicago. But I want to welcome first to the 21st Dr. Erin King. She travels from her home in Missouri to Hope Clinic for Women in Granite City in Illinois. Many of her patients she's seeing from other states who are coming for medical services, including abortions. Dr. King, thank you for joining us on the 21st.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You're a practicing gynecologist in Missouri, but you make the effort to travel to Illinois to provide abortion care. Why is that?
I really feel that Illinois provides the ability for women to access abortion better, and I can provide more services and more honest services and better medical care to the patients when I'm in Illinois than when I'm in Missouri. So even though it's a pretty far drive from my house, I really feel it's important for those services to be available to women in Missouri and in Illinois, but in Missouri to be able to come over to Illinois to access those services.
And when you say better care in Illinois, what do you mean?
I'm able to actually provide good medical care. I'm not, although we are heavily restricted by just general state health regulations, which are very good regulations that restrict, you know, all medical providers to provide good quality care. I'm not specifically targeted as an abortion provider to provide different levels of care for abortion care versus the other types of health care that I do.
When we first reached out to you, you were actually working with a patient from Indiana who couldn't afford traveling to Illinois for your clinic services. How common is it for people like that, for you to have patients that are coming here to Illinois?
Extremely common. So I actually had a chance to quickly look at our patients' data from the last year, last night, and it looks like about at least 60% of our patients come from outside of Illinois, which is pretty high given how big of a state Illinois is, how high the population is, and where we're located. So at least 60% travel from outside Illinois last year.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
And 50% of those 50% of our patients last year were from Missouri.
Okay. We're speaking with Dr. Erin King. She's the interim executive director at the Hope Clinic for Women. She's based in Granite City, Illinois, which is near St. Louis. I want to invite someone else into the conversation as well. Kristen Schorsch, we were talking about the article that Crane Chicago Business did. She's a healthcare reporter. She's the one who wrote that story and is on the line with us from Chicago. Hi, Kristen. Welcome to the 21st.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I wonder, as we're hearing what Dr. King is saying, what does your reporting show about what the numbers tell us about how many women are coming to Illinois for abortion care and services?
Right. Well, so the most recent data that's national in scope that can break it down by state levels from 2012, so it's a bit dated. But what it shows is that a good portion of, you know, the most women who are coming to Illinois from outside of the state are from Missouri, Indiana, and Wisconsin for abortions. But when you talk to Planned Parenthood specifically, you know, their biggest population when you think of out-of-staters coming here is from Indiana. And, you know, obviously Indiana is very close to the border. A lot of people who work in Chicago live in Northwest Indiana. So, you know, what they're seeing is that as the laws in Indiana around abortion have become way more restrictive, that is sending women over the border to come here for the procedure. As much as happening at Planned Parenthood, it's happening at private abortion clinics as well. But obviously, with Planned Parenthood being one of the biggest providers of abortions in Illinois, focusing on their numbers, I think, really helps kind of portray what's happening here.
Kristen, do you see this as being a new trend? Do you think the numbers are going up? I know you said the data is not, some of the data that you have is older, but the Planned Parenthood data is more recent.
Yep. I mean, it's hard to tell because, right, some of the data is so old. But just anecdotally, what I'm hearing from providers is, yes, that they are seeing more and more women coming from out of state, especially as you can see, there's a really interesting nonprofit called the Guttmacher Institute, and they track abortion laws nationwide. And so, for example, in 2000, there were 13 states that were considered hostile to abortion rights, meaning they just had far more restrictive laws than others. In 2015, that has already increased to 21 states being considered extremely hostile. So they actually even added a layer of hostility, so to speak, to this map they have, and they're tracking all these policies. So Illinois is referred to in the Midwest and around the country as this oasis, so to speak, for women because they have far less restrictive laws when it comes to abortion. It's also, I mean, if you think of red and blue states, it's, you know, when you think of its neighbors, it's a blue state surrounded by a sea of red. So it's going to have less restrictive laws than other states.
Dr. King, as we're talking about this and you're sharing with us with your practice that you're seeing as much as 60% of women coming from outside of Illinois, have you seen those numbers increase? I'm not sure how long you've been practicing, what you've seen over the past few years.
Yes, I've been in this location for about 6 years. And absolutely in the last year to year and a half, specifically probably after the 72-hour waiting period was enforced in Missouri, we've seen an increase in out-of-state patients. So we've really seen our percentages change of where our patients are coming from, and definitely a higher percentage from Missouri than we had in the last couple of years, and a higher percentage of patients from other states, too. We do see some patients from Indiana, Oklahoma, Kentucky and Tennessee are the kind of the main states we see patients as well from. But we've absolutely seen a change, and we've seen a change really correlating with some of the restrictions that Missouri has passed in the last several years.
Kristen, Dr. King just mentioned a 72-hour waiting period in Missouri. How does Illinois compare with surrounding states in terms of laws and regulations about abortion? Can you explain that to us?
Yeah, so in terms of Illinois, you know, as I mentioned before, it has far, you know, less restrictive laws. One of the things they do require is that women who are 17 or younger have to notify an adult relative or they can secure a waiver from a judge. But again, that's just a notification. It's not even a requirement that their parents give the okay. But when you look at surrounding states, so Indiana has a lot of different laws. One of the most controversial ones that was recently just struck down by a federal judge was this past spring, Governor Pence, who, you know, now has been announced as the VP running mate with the presidential nominee Donald Trump. Governor Pence had signed a law that banned abortions for women whose babies were found to have a fetal abnormality, is how it's defined, such as Down syndrome. But again, a federal judge struck that down. And there has been a lot of back and forth controversy between Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky and the Indiana legislature. Planned Parenthood, though, just did announce recently that they're actually going to be closing some of their clinics, so which, you know, to me would signal that, you know, if they just announced that, you know, last week.
That was last week. And that was Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky, correct, Kristen, that said they were going to be closing some clinics?
Right. So I could see that, you know, sending even more women over to Illinois if there's even more reduced access. Because I was hearing when I was doing my reporting for the story, you know, that women in Indiana, even if they have access to a Planned Parenthood clinic there, they might have to drive several hours just within the state. That sometimes if you live in downstate, you still might have a 2 to 3 hour drive. And if you have to take off for work, or if you can't find childcare for your other children, or it's just, you know, it's an inconvenience for them because they can't get there in time. In Missouri, for example, women have to wait to meet, they have to meet with a counselor first, and then they have to wait up to 72 hours before getting a procedure. In Wisconsin, they only will use public money for an abortion if a woman's health is in danger or if she is a victim of rape or incest. So the surrounding states make it a lot tougher for women to get this procedure. In Illinois, if you wanted to get an abortion, you literally could see a doctor, have the procedures done, get the counseling, have the test done that would lead up to that, see a counselor, and then have an abortion the same day. So that's another reason why women would come to this state. But to play devil's advocate, when I was talking to lawmakers who support more restrictive abortion laws, such as in Indiana, you know, they don't believe that these are barriers for women. If anything, they think it is protecting women more to make sure that the care they're getting is high quality and is definitely adequate. And so they think that the laws that they are passing are protecting the health of the mother and their unborn child.
Dr. King, I wanted to ask you about that because as Kristen is sort of laying out to us what the regulations are, I'm curious your perspective from a medical provider, how you feel like that plays out for you as someone who lives in Missouri but has chosen to practice in Illinois. Is it because you think the restrictions are equally restrictive for providers as well as for women who want to receive those services?
Yes to both those questions. So, I absolutely see the targeted regulations against abortion providers or the TRAP laws that we're talking about that many legislators are saying are for improving the quality of abortion care, improving the health of women, just be restrictive barriers. And there's really good medical evidence that shows these restrictions or specific restrictions such as waiting periods or ambulatory surgical centers or admitting privileges to hospitals for doctors are some of the examples of those restrictions in different states, that those do create a barrier to women, further travel, more expenses, harder to access, less facilities to access their care at, and do not improve the medical outcomes of the procedure. So abortion is an extremely safe procedure. The complication rate of an abortion is way less than 1%, so it is safer than pretty much any other outpatient medical procedure that you can get. It is hundreds of times safer than actual childbirth, and it is already a very safe procedure. And there's really good evidence showing that restrictions such as an ambulatory surgical center requirement to have your procedure done in an ambulatory surgical center does not make the procedure any safer. So there's a good study that came out of the Texas Policy Evaluation Project, which was done around the time that some very restrictive Texas legislation was introduced, that looked at over 35,000 procedures, abortion procedures that were done in the state, and a complication rate of way less than 1%. And that no change once the requirements of an ambulatory surgical center were introduced, no change in that complication rate. So we really have good evidence backing up the quality of the healthcare already and good evidence that the new laws are really just restrictive barriers and are not improving the healthcare of the patients.
Dr. King, I wonder if you can tell us a little bit about the clients. I think that maybe, I wonder if people have misperceptions or maybe don't know. This is such a divisive issue when you're talking about abortion and abortion care and providers. I think there's a lot of maybe misperceptions people might have about who your clients are. And I'm just curious if you could share us a little bit more about the demographics of who comes to the Hope Clinic for Women.
Yes, absolutely. We see clients from all different backgrounds. So we have patients that are that have a lot of financial barriers, that are lower in income, that are coming from areas that are or you know parts of their state that they don't have a lot of money or resources in that area. We see patients from big cities, small cities. We see patients with a fair amount of money. So we see really across the board. Most of the patients that we're seeing recently, probably in the last couple of years, more people are requiring funding assistance. And so we're definitely seeing more people who have less financial resources. And we're seeing across the board all different races of people, ethnic backgrounds, like I said, kind of all different religious backgrounds. So we really see everyone. On a given day in our waiting room, when you just look around, you see all different people from all different, first of all, areas of the country, but second of all, types of different lives. So it's a really interesting mixture.
Kristen, we're going to talk to Planned Parenthood in a minute, but I wonder, as you're hearing Dr. King talking about this, if what you hear from Planned Parenthood about their how many more people they're seeing in terms of out-of-state patients.
Right. Well, so for Planned Parenthood, yes, especially, like I mentioned before, you know, Indiana is their is essentially their top increase in patients coming for abortion services, because while they're seeing this spike overall in medical services, because really their, you know, contraception is the most popular service that they have, but for Indiana in particular, they had 44% of all their visits coming there were for abortion in 2015, and that has already jumped to 57%. So they're definitely seeing, even though abortion has lower numbers in other services, they're definitely seeing an uptick there. I also will say one of the things I think will be interesting to watch is definitely this election that's happening, the presidential election, because with Governor Pence being the running mate, and also as one of the experts who I had interviewed for the story pointed out to me, a lot of the legislation for abortion is not typically at the federal level, it's at the state level. So,
Kristen, I'm
going to
stop you there because we're going to take a break, but we can pick up that thought in just a minute. You're listening to The 21st. Stay tuned. We'll continue this conversation in just a minute. Welcome to the 21st. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We've been talking about why more women are coming to Illinois for abortion services than other surrounding states. We've been talking about how Illinois is different from its surrounding states and other Midwestern states with Dr. Erin King. She lives in Missouri. She travels to Illinois, to Granite City for work, where she's the interim executive director at the Hope Clinic for Women. On the line with us as well, Kristen Schorsch has been writing about this issue for Crane Chicago Business. Kristen, just wanted to ask you about how you are seeing with your what your reporting is showing about how providers in Illinois are adapting. As you're saying, particularly this election season is going to be, your thought right before the break was, we've got an interesting election season ahead of us. Most of these laws are determined by states, point of how restrictive Indiana is. And now current Governor Mike Pence is now the Republican vice presidential pick. How are providers in Illinois adapting to all of this?
Well, I mean, providers in Illinois, I mean, with it being a Democratic state, I think one of the things that this one expert was mentioning to me was a good thing to pay attention to would be how the legislation changes in the surrounding states and who gets elected to these seats. Because most of the, when you think about legislation regarding abortion, it's mostly done at the state level. It hasn't really been successful to have advocates go to the, you know, to at the federal level and really try and change the laws. So what you've seen over the years is a big shift since 2010, when a lot of the Tea Party candidates swept into the state legislative seats. That's why you're seeing all of the restrictions become more. That's why you're seeing all the laws become more restrictive at the state level versus at the federal level. So I think something to watch for this election season is obviously who, you know, gets an office at the presidential level. But more importantly, if you want to think about abortion laws, who gets in at the state level?
That's Kristen Schorsch. She's a healthcare reporter with Crane Chicago Business. Kristen, thanks for being with us.
Sure. Thanks very much for having me.
Kristen's reporting showed that Planned Parenthood of Illinois has seen a 20% spike in patients for overall medical visits in the past year. Joining us now from Planned Parenthood of Illinois is Katie Thede. She's the Vice President of Development. Katie, welcome to the 21st.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
How have you all handled the increase of patients that you all have seen over the past year?
You know, overall, Planned Parenthood of Illinois has experienced increased demand across our services, including increased demand for our birth control and contraceptive counseling, sexually transmitted infection testing, and abortion care. And in response, Planned Parenthood of Illinois has invested in expanded health center hours, increased staff capacity, and health center renovations as well.
And how have you all increased your staff or hours to help alleviate the increase of patients this past year?
Well, we've hired more registered health assistants, reproductive health assistants, as well as clinicians to be able to better meet patient needs.
And we know that, you know, we were just talking with Kristen about how Planned Parenthood in Indiana, Kentucky in the past week has announced some clinics that will also be closed in neighboring states as we're already looking at this increasing number of women coming from out of state. Are you anticipating even greater demand for your services in Illinois in the coming year?
You know, the number of patients from Indiana and neighboring states accessing Planned Parenthood of Illinois health centers has continued to be strong over the past several years. And in the last year, Planned Parenthood of Illinois has seen an increase in the number of patients from Indiana who are increasingly accessing services for abortion care. So we've identified some communities that could greatly benefit from a new Planned Parenthood of Illinois health center.
And where are those communities?
One of those communities is in Southern Cook County. Like I said, we've been, you know, identifying communities that could benefit from a greater presence from Planned Parenthood of Illinois. We're looking at a variety of factors, including population of reproductive health age individuals, sexually transmitted infection rates, and lack or prevalence of other reproductive health care providers in the area.
So while you're saying that, in fact, it sounds like what you're saying is while Planned Parenthood of Illinois, Indiana and Kentucky is closing, you all are expanding. Would that be accurate?
That's true. We have seen an increase in demand for Planned Parenthood of Illinois patient or services. And Planned Parenthood of Illinois is committed to meeting our patients where they are through expanding access to care here in Illinois.
And I think that I wanted to ask you, you know, we've been focusing on abortion services. As you mentioned, Planned Parenthood provides many other services. So when clinics close, I just wanted to ask you what other services the organization provides for women's health care needs.
Sure. We provide a wide range of reproductive health services, including, as I mentioned earlier, birth control and contraceptive counseling. We offer sexually transmitted infection treatment. We also offer cancer screenings and well person exams. And in addition to continuing to provide the reproductive health care that we've provided for years, we're also expanding the scope of our services here at Planned Parenthood of Illinois to, again, better meet our patients' needs. So over the last year, we've expanded to offer transgender hormone therapy treatments to better serve our transgender patients. We've also expanded to offer PrEP, which is pre-exposure prophylaxis therapy, and that's a regimen for HIV prevention. So we have been doing a good deal of expansion in terms of our scope.
Katie, do you have a sense of how many people come from for abortion care versus other services for your client population?
You know, I can't speak to the number, but what I can say is that we definitely see the majority of our patients coming for preventive reproductive health care.
That's Katie Thede with Planned Parenthood of Illinois. On the line with us as well is Dr. Aaron King, who's the interim executive director at the Hope Clinic for Women in Granite City. Dr. King, we got a question on Facebook I was hoping you could answer. Steph wanted to know what the circumstances were for women seeking abortion. And she says, growing up, I was given the characterization of only young women seeking abortion, but that doesn't track with women she's met. So that's the question. That's the question she had. She also wanted to know if there were dangers associated with being unable to seek an abortion.
Yeah, those are both great questions. I think people think about the typical person getting an abortion is a younger woman who is either uneducated or is very poor, and that's absolutely not what we see. Our demographics, like I said, are far. We see a wide range of different women. We see women as young as, you know, young teenagers to their mid-40s. So we really see women across the reproductive health care time span seeking to get an abortion. The most common, the highest volume of women is really in the age range of about 25 to 35 years old. So really that's the most common age for a woman to seek an abortion, just given national statistics. And her second question was the dangers of not being able to access abortion care. There's twofold. People will still try to access high-quality care, and whether that's driving really far or taking days off of work or the days that their children need to be in child care. So one of the, I guess, risks or downsides is the increased expense. If there are not high-quality care providers that those patients can access, there are reports of patients accessing providers which are not under state regulations, that are not providing high-quality care at lower costs, and there's a much higher risk of infection and bleeding and other really high-risk complications by accessing abortion through services or through people who are not licensed to practice medicine or not licensed to provide abortions or are not following good medical health care guidelines.
Dr. King, we heard Kristen, the reporter, talking about people who support restrictive abortion, saying that it's about providing quality health care for women. And I wanted to ask you what the conversation is among providers about what you think is likely to happen next in terms of laws around the country.
Well, if you asked me 3 weeks ago, I would have been much more pessimistic in my answer. After the Supreme Court made their decision on the whole women's health care decision on June,
in Texas.
Beginning of June, mm-hmm. June 27th, yeah, in Texas, but that really applies nationally. So the opinion of the Supreme Court was that the laws that were passed need to have a medical basis and show that they are actually a medically beneficial to patients and not just a barrier. And I think they were very strong in their opinion, the Supreme Court was, in stating clearly that if you are going to be imposing laws related to abortion, that you need to be absolutely showing they are not just barriers and an undue burden to women, but they actually have medical benefit, which the two specific laws in Texas, the Supreme Court found, did not have medical benefits. In fact, the wording is very strong, especially from Ruth Bader Ginsburg, about the laws really being simply to make it more difficult for women to obtain an abortion, and that that no one could say from the evidence that they were presented that there was any medical benefit to the laws.
That's Dr. Erin King. Thanks for joining us. She's the interim executive director at the Hope Clinic for Women in Granite City. Thanks also to Katie Thede from Planned Parenthood of Illinois. Thanks to everyone who chimed in as well on Facebook. You can always join our conversation. Search for the 21st, like us there, and you can comment while we're on the air. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
This is the 21st. A second attempt to let voters decide who draws the lines for legislative districts was shot down in court this morning. But is this the end of the Independent Maps initiative? Joining us now is the campaign manager with that initiative from his office in Chicago, David Millay. Dave, welcome to the 21st.
Hi, good morning.
So, Dave, we saw now this morning Cook County Circuit Judge Diane Larson ruling that this will not be on the ballot this November, even with the required 600,000 signatures. Where do you all go from here?
We are filing an immediate appeal to the state Supreme Court, and that is where everyone on all sides has always assumed this would end up. It's a matter that hasn't been addressed by the state Supreme Court in the past, and they need to tell the voters whether or not they're going to give them the opportunity to reform their own constitution.
And so from your standpoint, you don't see this morning's ruling as a setback?
It's just a speed bump for us. We knew that no matter which way the judge ruled, we would appeal, or our opposition would be appealing and asking the Supreme Court to overturn that. So it's always been planned to go all the way up there, and they need to make that ultimate decision.
Dave, what's your sense of the timing of that? I understand you guys have asked for an expedited appeal.
That's correct. The ballots for November need to be certified by August 26th, so we're going to propose that timeline that would enable us to get a decision before that time.
Okay. That's Dave Millay. He's a campaign manager with the Independent Maps Initiative, joining us from Chicago. Thanks for that, Dave.
No problem.
Matt Dietrich has been covering this effort for Reboot Illinois. He's also on the line with us from Chicago. Hey, Matt, welcome back to the 21st.
Thank you, Nyla.
So can maybe you can explain for people, I wanted to get that immediate reaction from the independent map amendment folks in there. He's saying this is a really important issue for voters. Can you explain how an independent map would change the way voting districts are drawn, legislative
right.
districts are drawn up in Illinois?
Right now, the process for drawing the legislative district maps for Illinois senators and representatives in the General Assembly is the biggest political prize there is. The parties will fight to the death to win the right to redraw those districts after every 10 years after the U.S. Census. And the reason they fight so hard to win it is that when you can draw those district maps, you can create maps that are districts that are very friendly to the members of your party. You can draw boundaries so that you capture all, say, all the Democrat, the vast majority of Democratic voters within a certain geographic region, or you can cut out the opposing, if there's a stronghold of, say, Republicans, you can cut that out of a certain district. It makes it very easy for incumbents to stay in office. They also use it as a punitive tool if there's someone from the opposite party who they're tired of dealing with. They will draw a district around the incumbent's district. They'll draw them out of their district. And there's a process in the Illinois Constitution that's described that's supposed to help if the two parties are arguing about how to pass a new district map. There's a whole process they're supposed to go through that is supposed to force them into compromising. Well, that has only worked one time since the Constitution's been in effect since 1970.
Yeah, Matt, I wanted to ask you about, because this whole notion of redistricting, of redrawing maps, I'm thinking back to when President Obama was in Springfield and brought this up and sort of the silence he was met with when he said, as a bipartisan, both of you need to, both groups, both parties need to work on redrawing the lines of boundaries here. And I wanted to ask you, if incumbent Republicans and Democrats are on the same side of this, we heard from the Independent Maps Amendment folks. The lawyer who opposed this also happens to be general counsel for Illinois' Democratic Party. I want to ask about the House Speaker Michael Madigan and also incumbent Republicans, where they're falling on this issue.
I think the leaders are, Madigan's been outspoken against this. He thinks that the system as it is should stand. Cullerton has been less vocal about it, but he also didn't support this amendment. The Republicans, of course, have been very much in favor of this. And I think a lot of the rank-and-file Democrats, if you polled them, I think a lot of them would say, yeah, it's. I think they would say, yeah, we need a new system because there is no trust in this system now. And both sides, they fight and fight. In 1990, the Republicans got to draw the map by the luck of the draw, which is this crazy process that we have for breaking a tie when there's a when the two parties argue about and can't find a compromise. They pull a name out of a hat, and the Republicans got to draw it in 1990, and 4 years later, we had the only 2 years that Michael Madigan was not Speaker of the House because they won back a majority in the Illinois House. It was the only time in the last 32 years that the Republicans have controlled the House. But and President Obama was talking, too, about congressional gerrymandering, which is even a bigger problem, but is not addressed in this particular effort.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Matt Dietrich about the ruling that just happened a few hours ago about the Independent Maps Amendment in Illinois. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We're talking about an attempt to let voters decide who draws the lines for legislative districts. That was shot down in court this morning and now goes to the Supreme Court. The Independent Maps Amendment proponents say they've asked for an expedited appeal to the Supreme Court and say that this morning's ruling is not a setback. We're talking to Matt Dietrich. He's been covering this effort for Reboot Illinois. Matt, I want to go back to something you said before the break, because you were talking about a point in Illinois history in the 90s where our laws, there was a tie. Literally, a name was drawn out of the hat in terms of who was going to be able to redraw districts. And I just want to make it clear for everyone who's listening, that happened in the 90s. This process, this amendment, is a proposal to allow for a commission that would draw the legislative districts rather than legislators, correct?
Right, right. And I should have probably shortened it in my explanation earlier, but essentially what this comes down to is, under the current system, you have politicians choosing their voters rather than voters choosing their politicians. And that's the essence of redistricting reform right there.
Let me ask you about the fact that this would be an amendment, because this is the second time that this amendment's been proposed. And I want to take a step back and ask you, Article 14, Section 3 of our Constitution says that voters can put an amendment on the ballot, but it's very rare for that to actually happen.
Right.
Why is that?
Well, and I think this confuses a lot of people, because they hear about California is constantly having these propositions that citizens bring up.
You Same know, thing in Colorado, Florida, sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in Florida, Colorado legalized marijuana based on a citizen-led petition. In Illinois, you can't do that. In Illinois, the Constitution says citizens can only change the state constitution as it pertains to the structure and procedure of the Illinois General Assembly. Ever since the 1970 Constitution was ratified, there has only been one citizen initiative that ever made it to the ballot, and that happened in 1980. It was an effort that was led by Pat Quinn. After lawmakers voted themselves a pay raise, he led a citizen initiative, and he got the size of the Illinois House reduced from 177 members to 118 members. Voters approved that amendment. Since then, there have been two efforts to try to get term limits placed on the ballot as a constitutional amendment. The first of those happened in 1994. Pat Quinn led that one. Another one happened 2 years ago. It was led by Governor Bruce Rauner. Both times, the Supreme Court rejected term limits and said, the justices were very definitive 2 years ago in saying that term limits is not an issue that a citizen initiative can amend the Constitution about.
So, Matt, the big question we have here now is, will the Illinois Supreme Court say that whether or not voters have the right to have a commission read, is that something that's in the purview of citizens?
Right. And this has never been tested before the Supreme Court. And the interesting thing, Nyla, is 2 years ago, you had another lawsuit on another redistricting case, very much like this one. And the judge, the Cook County judge in that case, it was Judge Mary Mikva, ruled that that the redistricting effort was okay under Article 13, Section 3, that it did pertain to the structure and procedure of the General Assembly. What we have today now, let me back up. That case never made it to the Supreme Court.
Okay, Matt, I'm afraid we're out of time. But thanks for this. Go ahead.
Today's decision was the opposite of that.
So
we're going to see. Hopefully the Supreme Court will decide it.
Yes, and we will find this out hopefully before August 26th. Matt Dietrich is an editor with Reboot Illinois. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks.
Robert Jones was introduced this morning as the new chancellor for the University of Illinois' Urbana campus. Once approved by the Board of Trustees, he'll be its first African-American chancellor. University of Illinois President Timothy Killeen said it was a historic day for the campus and that Jones is well qualified for the job.
Robert's life story matches the core mission that has guided the University of Illinois since its founding, an anniversary that he will help us celebrate next year during our sesquicentennial. The son, as you've heard, of a Georgia sharecropper, he used higher education as a springboard to his dreams, a career as an accomplished educator and scientist, a respected research university leader, and now as head of one of the world's premier universities. Robert's vision is to make that transformational journey possible for everyone, and his experiences make him ideally qualified to lead our students in this great institution to an even brighter future. His achievements and character, I think we all agreed, check literally every box on our wish list for a new permanent chancellor.
That's University of Illinois President Timothy Killeen. Robert Jones comes to Illinois from New York, where he's been the president of SUNY. He talked about his journey where he grew up in Georgia to the place where he is today.
You know, I grew up in the peanut and cotton fields of southwestern Georgia, so I'm reminded, and I have been reminded each and every day of my professional life, that it's a long way from a sharecropper's shack in Georgia to leading one of the most renowned universities in this country, if not this entire world. And I can't tell you how humbling that is for me. But I feel strongly that everything that I've done since the time that I was standing in that cotton field in southwestern Georgia, looking at this handful of cotton and trying to figure out how this green plant can produce this white mass of material that somebody thinks has some value. All I know, it caused me to have to work harder than I probably should have been at 8 or 9 years old. That was the context that I had. But that became the backdrop and the impetus for me to pursue science, because I knew that notwithstanding the experience of being the son of a sharecropper, I knew that through education, I had the opportunity to provide a better livelihood for myself and my family and future generations. And I feel very strongly that everything that I've done since that time has prepared me for this opportunity and for this moment. I firmly believe we need to find ways to make my story, and I'm sure other stories that are comparable, possible for everyone, no matter where they've started in life, no matter what their parents do, or how fast technology and the economy and political forces are coming at us. We need to find ways to make that story one that isn't just limited to 4 or 5 years of our lives, but to the educational needs of a whole lifetime.
That's Robert Jones coming to us where he was president of the University of Albany, part of the State University System of New York, incoming chancellor for the Urbana campus for the University of Illinois. He was announced this morning at the Illini Union at a news conference. We caught up with him after it to ask him about his priorities going forward.
As I said, my priorities in the first 100 days, and this is a process that has served me well through the better part of my 27 years in higher education, is really to listen and to learn where the university is today and to get a perspective from all the constituents about where it needs to go in the future. I don't know enough about the assets and the parts of the university that are on the verge of moving to the next level of excellence to really shape a concrete vision per se. I think the strategic planning process that's been laid out is an excellent framework, and I can tell you, I plan to build on that framework. We will not have to kind of start all over, because I've read the strategic plan and I believe in it. I think it's the right approach and the right strategy. So my vision, my first 100 days is what I said, to listen and to learn. And out of that listening and learning, we will start to then articulate kind of a collective vision with priorities, where we're going and how we're going to get there.
One of the things I think is obviously sort of looming over the university and the state is the uncertainty regarding the budget situation, which is affecting both faculty and students.
Sure, affecting all of us.
I mean, how do you plan to sort of move forward when there's retention issues with both faculty and concern about students, not so much for the University of Illinois being such a flagship university, but certainly right. For smaller campuses?
Well, for smaller campuses, you know, that may not have the flexibility to reserve resources to see them through this period, it's going to be challenging. But I'm very, very proud of the fact that folks here have been very thoughtful and strategic and, you know, kind of have rainy day resources to see us through this budgetary crisis. But I will be working very hard with Chairman Killeen, with President Killeen, to really continue to advocate for the importance of higher education for the University of Illinois system and for all of its assets, because we are truly the anchor institutions in this state. We clearly drive the economic vitality of a very large part of the state. And so this is not a donation, it's an investment in the future of the state.
One last question for you. I know we've heard from some students who are very excited about the fact that you will be the first African-American chancellor for the Urbana campus. Those same students have been very active, some of them across the university, in protesting ongoing conversations about diversity and discrimination on campus.
Yes.
How do you plan to take part in those ongoing conversations?
I take part in it by, first of all, sitting down and engaging with those students, understanding what their issues. Again, I'm very big on this thing of listening. And I have done this my whole career, is sitting down with students, listening to their concerns, responding in a very proactive way to their concerns, but being very clear about the things that I have the power to do and the things I don't have any ability to affect, and be very, very clear about that. And hope that has served me well. It served me well at Albany, where we have a very good relationship with students. So when these kind of, you manage these issues by engaging with students before something happens on campus. So they know they can come to you. They can trust you to sit down and have a candid and honest conversation. And as I said, be very, very clear about where the common points of interest are and lay out a strategy to get the university incrementally where the students and I as the chancellor want it to be. And so that's how I do most of my really critically important work, is by engaging and listening and then creating a partnership with the student organizations that we work collectively for the common good of the university.
Thanks for your time. Welcome to
my
Illinois.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
After the news conference, I also spoke with a recent graduate of the University of Illinois. Jalen McClinton just ended his term as a student trustee for the entire University of Illinois 3 campus system. I asked him what was going through his mind as Robert Jones was speaking this morning.
I was in a happy place, to be quite honest. You know, I think that this, like you said, this moment in history is a very critical time for higher education. And so when I think about, you know, this idea of a sharecropper's son now being the leader of such a prestigious public university, I'm in a happy place. I mean, I think this is going to be an incredible experience for him. And of course, he's new to this area, and so he's going to need lots of support from everyone. But I think that because he is an African-American man, I think that he will bring different perspectives to the table that will in turn impact the kind of political stalemate in Springfield, making connections with key caucuses, I think facilitating conversations about diversity and leadership. And so I'm really excited for what's to come as I look back to the university as an alumnus now, what the future holds and what it can bring.
Jalen, you were one of 3 African-American student trustees last year.
That's correct.
And that was the first time in history. Why do you think it's important for, especially as a former, as a now an alum, but as a former African-American student at the University of Illinois, to have someone like Chancellor Jones be in leadership at the university?
Sure. I think it sends a very loud and clear message that this population is a priority. And I think that when you have students who are applying to this place and they come to campus and don't necessarily see people who look like them, they oftentimes get turned off and don't want to come here. And so I think that it sends a very public message to prospective students that you are a priority here and that we do want you, and we're going to work hard to make sure that you do want to come to a place like Illinois. So.
Jalen, yeah, you were tweeting yesterday about how excited you were. What would you like Chancellor Jones to be doing? What would you like him to accomplish in his first year for the students?
Sure. I mean, I think that the numbers for students of color are increasing. I think the number of African-American freshmen admitted, of course, is a large number, but I think the amount that's actually coming was like 691, and so that's above this whole idea of a Project 500, so I'm very excited about that. But we need to make sure that students are coming here, and then we also implement the resources to keep them here so that they get a 4-year degree and go off into the world and remain involved. And so I'm hopeful that he can build relationships in the General Assembly, because I think that the budget should be priority number one. So working with Dr. Colleen to do that. But then also really facilitating a conversation on the Urbana campus about leadership and implementing diverse strategies to recruit more faculty of color and women of color, while also implementing aggressive strategies to recruit diverse students. today is just kind of like my happy day. Pharrell is just playing like in my head.
Thanks so much for joining us, Jalen.
Thank you.
That's Jalen McClinton. The Board of Trustees formally votes later this week to confirm Robert Jones as the Urbana Campus Chancellor. He's expected to start October 3rd. That does it for us today. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.